Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It's been almost 30 years since scientists first discovered an exoplanet, a planet orbiting a star other than our own sun. But the scientific community is especially excited now with a discovery late last month of the most Earth-like exoplanets yet.
Jean Creighton is our astronomy contributor. She directs the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee, and she talked with Lake Effect's Bonnie North about why the latest discoveries are such a big deal.
It's useful to remember that exoplanets per se are not news, right? We have found literally thousands of them now. And when we say exoplanets, we're talking about planets that are around other stars. Sometimes people want to know, where are these things? And they're relatively nearby, definitely within our galaxy. We're nowhere close to being able to determine planets around stars that exist in other galaxies, although presumably
they assume that they exist.
Right, but
yeah.
We don't have the wherewithal yet to do that. Okay, so what makes the TRAPPIST-1 discovery? So in case our listeners didn't hear, we found 7 Earth-like planets around one star, a cool red star, red dwarf we call them, 3 of which are in the what we call life zone. So what isn't surprising or new is that we have found multiple planets around one star. We have many systems like that. We have found in the past planets in the life zone of a star before. I believe it's the first time that we found 3. Now, why we think 3 is exciting is because the definition of where the life zone is, and that's basically where water is not too hot, not too cold, so it can be liquid, requires some assumptions about how much light gets reflected off the surface, what kind of atmosphere we're looking at, which means that if you have 3 in the life zone, even if one of your assumptions wasn't so great, surely one of them is.
So the fact that there are 3 just ups our chances of finding a planet that could be Earth-like.
Right.
Okay.
And now let's explore what the term Earth-like means, because sometimes scientists say that and the general public hear it and they both think something quite different.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if you say that means that we might be able to live there, but that's not necessarily true.
Well, the might, maybe, but I think in your mind, that might be a stronger statement than what I think is intended.
Okay.
When we say Earth-like, what we mean is that it would have the density of the Earth, so it wouldn't be a gas planet. Many, many, many of our first exoplanets were what we called hot Jupiters, so really big gas giants super close to the star that they were going around, so closer, say, than Mercury's orbit to the sun. So that's not a promising place.
Not for
more
us.
for more than one reason.
Right.
Well, for anybody, really.
Right.
So we thought, okay, let's look for places that at least have density of rock, something that we could stand on, something that, somebody could live on. So what's cool about these 7 planets is that we were able simultaneously to measure both their diameter and their mass, which means that you can figure out their density. And that's why we say the 7 of them have densities like the Earth. So that's why it's Earth-like. That doesn't mean that we've established that it has an atmosphere necessarily. That doesn't mean that we know anything about this atmosphere should it exist. We certainly don't know if there are any creatures walking on there, right? But this is a really important step. And then you start thinking, okay, well, let's target those worlds. Let's look at them with a really sensitive telescope so that we can analyze the chemistry of an atmosphere, should there be one.
Now, I know a lot of times the way we determine whether there's an exoplanet around a star or not, I know there's a mathematical way of doing it. It's not like we're actually looking at the planet through a telescope. We're doing it by...
We're inferring its existence.
Inferring its existence.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Have we determined that these 7 planets Have we seen them, or are we still inferring existences?
Okay. No, we have not seen. So photographing exoplanets, taking a picture of them, is very, very hard. And I believe there's maybe a handful or maybe two handfuls of things that have been actually photographed. And what they look like are little specks on a picture, right?
Yeah, because we just can't get close enough.
Yeah, they're itty-bitty. Yeah. So those cool artist renderings with clouds and
which we've talked
features,
about before.
That's complete fiction. And you got to give points to the people who try and make these pictures, because I'm sure that they use all the information that they have to make it as plausible as possible. But at this time, we're not able to resolve individual features on another planet outside the solar system. That's for sure.
Okay. So when you talk about looking at these seven planets and trying to do more, we're talking about the way we look at any exoplanet. We're trying to gather data the way we always have.
Right. So, yeah. And there are basically two things that you can do, two things we do. One is you look at the brightness of the star, and when the planet crosses, if you're lucky enough that the geometry is such that the planet crosses in front of the disk of the star, it makes the brightness of the star drop, and from that you can infer the size of the planet that's crossing it.
Okay.
That's how you get a diameter. And then if you want to get the mass, in some cases it's possible to see as the planet, which you can't see it as you can't photograph, but you notice that the star is wobbling in a periodic fashion in response to the revolution of its planet around it. So we have now improved the sensitivity with which we can measure these wobbles to about 2 miles per hour.
Wow.
So if a star changes its speed to within 2 miles per hour, that's a slow-moving person, we can measure. And then the math is simple to figure out what mass needs to be going around it to make that response.
So very cool then.
Yes, yes.
Very cool. So what are the next steps with these seven planets? When are we likely to know more about them?
My guess is that we're going to much better, different information when the James Webb Telescope goes up, and that's scheduled for October 2018. The signal that we get from each of those dots might be strong enough to analyze spectra in detail, so really understand if there's an atmosphere, what kind of atmosphere. And that's the next logical step in determining in this path, in this continuum of Earth-like, where you can begin by saying, okay, it has approximately the same size, or it has approximately the same mass. The next step, oh, but it has the same density. Oh, but it has an atmosphere. Ah, an atmosphere with oxygen. Oh, temperature of blah, blah. You know, you move the mark of how more meaningful the statement is Earth-like. Does
yes.
that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the next question is, when do we go? Assuming it's an actual Earth-like planet, the way I think of Earth-like planet.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. So so I hate to sort of
not in my
step
lifetime.
on your dreams, but I had this conversation with a class I was teaching, and they got so excited because the announcement was effectively at the same time as our class. So I said, okay, let's just see the NASA announcement, because I didn't know what it was. I mean, it was embargoed. So, you know, we watched this together. And I'm thinking, wow, this is exciting. So my students are like, when are we going? And I said, people, let's think about this for a moment. Light takes 40 years to travel this distance. And even if we could travel close to the speed of light, 40 years is a long, long time to be in space. At this point, we're not even close to being able to do that. And we're not, of course, even close to being able to travel this far. So I said, in order for us to get there, we're going to have to make a pretty significant technological leap. And even then, we're going to need to figure out lots of ways of keeping people safe, healthy, and happy to make that kind of trip. So we need to dream still some more.
Okay. I'll have to go back and watch Star Trek or something.
Yeah, you know, yep. You have to get your fix another way. Yeah.
Oh, darn it. But it's still very cool that we're able to see, and I put air quotes around see, these planets, and we know that they're there. And as you say, over the next decade, we'll learn that much more mm-hmm. about what they are really like.
Right. It's very exciting times.
It really is. I'm very glad. I just wish I was at the time where I could actually go, but somebody else will have to do that.
Somebody else will have to do that.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Jean, it is always wonderful to talk about things going on in astronomy with you, and I look forward to next month.
I do, too.
Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. She talked with Bonnie North, and you can find links to more about exoplanets at WUWM.com.
Planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing left to